Well, thank you for joining us on Zoom. Thank you for being in the hall. So we're going to be looking at this subject, the time of the end. And what I want to try and prove to you this evening is that the time of the end is a specific time of period, surprisingly at the end, and it's a very short period of time, and that we are in it right now. And there aren't several times of the end. There's just one time of the end. You can't have lots of times of the end. And you might say to yourself, well, what is it the end of? And it's the time of the end of the rule of the kingdoms of men, as the Bible might describe it. It's basically the time that is going to bring to an end the rule of the governments of this world and usher in the long-awaited kingdom of God that's going to replace all of the nations that we know on earth with a worldwide government. And that is going to happen, of course, when Jesus Christ returns from heaven soon. And God in his mercy has given us quite a lot of detail about specific things that are going to happen in this short period of time called the time of the end, that are the prelude to Jesus Christ being back on this earth and God's kingdom being established. So I thought it'd be good to look at this, especially because I think we're in this short period of time right now. I don't know how long that period of time is, by the way, but it isn't a long period of time. We'll see that in just a minute. Does anybody know, and you're going to know the answer to this because the clue was in just about everything we've had so far, but does anybody know where the phrase the time of the end appears? Which book in the Bible do you think? Daniel's a very good answer. And it's the only book in the Bible that it appears in. Do you know how many times the phrase the time of the end is mentioned in the book of Daniel? I heard a six. Not quite. If the exact phrase, the time of the end that we're looking for, it occurs five times in the book of Daniel. And the five times that it occurs, this is the exact phrase, the time of the end, is in chapter 8, verse 17. Can you see the screen okay? We want to knock the lights out over the screen. I don't know if that makes it a bit brighter. Chapter 8, verse 17, chapter 11, verse 35, chapter 11, verse 40, chapter 12, verse 4, and chapter 12, verse 9. Those are the only times in the whole of the Bible that this phrase, the time of the end, appears. And what we're going to do this evening is just think about this phrase. We're not really going anywhere else than where this crops up. Now, here's something quite interesting. I've looked in just about every version of the Bible that's out there at the minute. So, you know, you've got the King James, you've got the New King James, you've got the Revised Standard Version, you've got the New International Version, the New Living Translation, the Modern English Version, the Revised Standard Version. It doesn't matter what version you read. Every single modern version or old version, if you go back to Young's Literal Translation or whatever version, this is translated the same. The time of the end. It's always the same. It's almost as if God has wanted us to know, look, regardless of the version you picked off the shelf, you are going to read this phrase, the time of the end. Which is quite interesting. Now, we're going to just start sort of at the end of the time of the end by having a quick look at the last time that this phrase appears. So in your Bibles, if you have a look at Daniel chapter 12 and verse 9, this is the last time that the phrase the time of the end appears in the book of Daniel. And I know it's on the screen, but I think it's good for us to have in front of us these words. So it says in verse 9, go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed until the time of the end. Now, as many who perhaps said in the past, and I wouldn't totally disagree with this, but they've said, the book of Revelation was the unsealing of the book of Daniel. And of course, in a sense, it was, because seals were literally unfolded and read. But clearly, what we're being told here is that in some sense, the book of Daniel And the revealing of the book of Daniel doesn't happen itself until the time of the end. Because it says, Daniel, what I have said, this is a slightly different version, is what I have said is kept secret and sealed until the time of the end. So in other words, my understanding of this is that actually we're not going to fully comprehend and fully understand the secrets of Daniel until we get to the final period of time called the time of the end. Do you think that makes sense? We've got to wait for the end until we fully grasp it. It doesn't mean that people living thousands of years ago reading the Bible couldn't ever understand anything to do with the book of Daniel. I think what we're being told is, specifically at the time of the end, the secrets that are therein, because that word that's translated secret there in the Authorized Version is closed up. It means to make secret. And the reason I think that the words are secret, the words are revealed, if you like, are open to us at the very time of the end, is because it's only the people living at the time of the end that can fully understand what is happening and what the words are talking about. And you'll see why that's the case in just a minute. Now, if you want a description of what it's like at the time of the end, do you want a description of what it's like at the time of the end?
Yes,
good idea, isn't it? Well, fortunately for us, we've been given it. Because look back in verse 4, it says just a few verses before, a little description of what life will be like at the time of the end. Because it says, Thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Keep it all secret until the time of the end. And coming up now is a description of the time of the end. And it says, many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. Now, I don't know about you, but if you were trying to think of a description of what the world is like in just 10 words, could you come up with a better description in ancient times of the modern world than many shall run to and fro and knowledge shall be increased? I mean, up until, you know, for the first sort of 6,000 years roughly of man's existence, we went round at the speed, maximum speed of a horse. You wouldn't go any faster than a horse, would you? That was maximum speed. Now, in the car park, I bet there isn't a car under 150 brake horsepower out there. We've got hundreds of these horses. And we think nothing of hurtling here at the speed limit, at 70 miles an hour. We think nothing of getting on a train and getting up to over 100 miles an hour, or getting on an aeroplane and doing 400, 500 miles an hour. When it says many shall run to and fro, it literally, most versions, modern versions, will say many will rush to and fro. And that's the sense of it. Do you think we're rushing to and fro? Here, there, and everywhere. It's an amazing description. And the other bit, of course, is that it says in the same verse that knowledge will be increased. Time of the end, just that description, isn't it amazing? many run to and fro, and knowledge is increased. Have we ever seen, you know, if you went back just a few years ago and said, I'll be able to pick up a phone and look at it and talk to somebody live in Australia. It's incredible. I remember watching Back to the Future in the 80s or whenever that came out, and there were people walking around with devices. And I remember coming out of the cinema with some friends and saying, that's not going to happen. We're going to see people on little devices like that and talk to them? No. And here we are. It has happened before our very eyes. And so what I'm saying to you is, when it says that Daniel, go to Daniel, go now Daniel, but what I have said is kept secret and sealed to the time of the end. The time of the end is here and now. And now the words are all being unsealed before our eyes. The secrets are being revealed. That is basically what I'm going to hopefully show you. So what we're now going to do is going to have a look at Daniel chapter 8. Because this is the first time that the phrase, the time of the end, is used. And here we are, Daniel is in, so if you have a look at Daniel chapter 8 verse 1, we've got all the words on the screen as well. In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared unto me, that's Daniel, even unto me, Daniel, after that which appeared unto me at the first. Because Daniel's already had a vision. This is his second vision. So he's already had the first vision. The first vision was of the four beasts. We're not talking about the four beast vision that Daniel had in Daniel chapter. Where was his previous vision? What chapter was that? Seven. Daniel chapter 7 was his first vision. Daniel chapter 8 is his second vision. This is his second vision. In verse 17, we get the phrase, the time of the end, which Brother Paul read for us. Verse 17 says, slightly modern version, I became so terrified, says Daniel, when he saw this vision, that I fell with my face to the ground. Son of man, said the angel, you must understand that the events you have seen in your vision relate to the time of the end. They relate to the time of the end. What I've just shown you relates to the time of the end. They're sealed up till the time of the end. I've told you about things that are going to happen at the time of the end. And what I'm going to try and show you is something I think is just amazing. Because what we're going to go on a bit of a journey with is that the angel starts talking to Daniel. And it's the angel Gabriel, by the way. The angel starts talking to Daniel about ancient times, ancient things that are long, long, long ago. And you might say, well, that's nothing to do with the time of the end. And the ancient bit has got nothing, in a sense, nothing to do with the time of the end. But the angel is linking things that happened back here at the in ancient times all the way through to the time of the end. And you'll see in a minute how these things are linking together. So what we're going to be going on a journey, really, is like this. This first part of the talk, it's not really divided into chapter 8 and chapter 11, as I put in the thing. It's ended up that this first talk is looking at ancient times, and the next talk is taking us from ancient times to bang-up-to-date news, literally videos of things happening on the TV right now. Winston Churchill famously said that the further back that you look, the further forward you can see. And you know something, it's true. So we're going to spend a bit of time looking back. You might just say, forget about looking back. Let's just look at what's happening now, because that's a bit I'm interested in. But believe me, you've got to look back to be able to look forward. And that's exactly what the angel does. The angel goes back, shows some events, and then we're going to look to the future. So Daniel, in Daniel chapter 8, Daniel has this vision. And I'm going to play you the vision. Now, I put this together in PowerPoint. It would have looked a lot better, believe me. Daniel would have seen something pretty amazing. But this is my best shot of what Daniel saw in PowerPoint with some clip art. Dave, we might need to turn the volume up a little bit.
Chapter 8. In the third year of King Belshazzar's reign, I, Daniel, had a vision after the one that had already appeared to me. In my vision, I saw myself in the citadel of Susa in the province of Elam, In the vision, I was beside the Ulai Canal. I looked up, and there before me was a ram with two horns, standing beside the canal, and the horns were long. One of the horns was longer than the other, but grew up later. I watched the ram as he charged toward the west and the north and the south. No animal could stand against him, and none could rescue from his power. He did as he pleased and became great. As I was thinking about this, suddenly a goat with a prominent horn between his eyes came from the west, crossing the whole earth without touching the ground. He came toward the two-horned ram I had seen standing beside the canal and charged at him in great rage. I saw him attack the ram furiously, striking the ram and shattering his two horns. The ram was powerless to stand against him. The goat knocked him to the ground and trampled on him, and none could rescue the ram from his power. The goat became very great, but at the height of his power, his large horn was broken off, and in its place, four prominent horns grew up toward the four winds of heaven. Out of one of them came another horn, which started small but grew in power to the south and to the east and toward the beautiful land. It grew until it reached the host of the heavens, and it threw some of the starry host down to the earth and trampled on them. It set itself up to be as great as the prince of the host. It took away the daily sacrifice from him, and the place of his sanctuary was brought low. Because of rebellion, the host of the saints and the daily sacrifice were given over to it. It prospered in everything it did, and truth was thrown to the ground. Then I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to him, "How long will it take for the vision to be fulfilled, the vision concerning the daily sacrifice, the rebellion that causes desolation, and the surrender of the sanctuary and of the host that will be trampled underfoot?" He said to me, "It will take 2,300 evenings and mornings. Then the sanctuary will be reconsecrated."
Okay, so that is word for word the first few verses of Daniel chapter 8 and the vision that Daniel had. Okay, now Gabriel the angel interprets to Daniel what that was all about. And if we didn't have this, I think you'd struggle. But fortunately for us, we don't have to guess what this is talking about. Because in verse 20 of Daniel chapter 8, Gabriel interprets it. And he says, "The ram which you saw that had two horns are the kings of the Medes and the Persians. And the rough goat is the king of Grecia," it says in the AV, but it will say the king of Greece, or Red Greece, which is it's the king of Greece, yeah? "And the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king." So now we know what the angel is telling Daniel. And by the way, this was hundreds of years before it was about to happen. So this was actually future to Daniel when Daniel in Babylon was being told about things that were going to happen. So if we are putting this back into history, we know that after Babylon, there was an empire, wasn't there, called the Medes and the Persian Empire it was called. But it was the empire of the Medes and the Persians, because the Medes and the Persians got melded together. In history, when you go and look at it, it's the Medo-Persian Empire from 536 BC to 330 BC, and that is represented by the ram. That's what the vision started with, wasn't it? The ram on the right that was zooming around the place. And then what comes along was a goat, and the angel has just told us categorically that the goat is symbolic of the Empire of Greece. So we know that. And after the Medo-Persian Empire came the Greek Empire. So now we know the angel's telling us about the Greek Empire, symbolic of that goat. And the angel told us something else. The angel said that the rough goat is the king of Greece, and the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. Somebody tell me, who was the first king of Greece? Alexander the Great is the right answer, and there he is. Or at least a little bust of him, a statue of him. So there is Alexander the Great. He was the first king. We've got hundreds of years of history just played out in imagery in Daniel's, in his mind, through a vision. This isn't about the time of the end, is it? This is like, oh my goodness, we're thousands of years ago. 2,300 years ago. Come on, where's the time of the end? I'll show you why the angel is giving Daniel all this information that will link to the time of the end. It's just amazing. So, Gabriel keeps talking and keeps interpreting. Gabriel now says to Daniel, the four horns, you remember it said that the horn's going to get broken off? Do you remember that bit? And then it said that four horns were going to grow up once the big horn had broken off. Did you see that on the screen? Amazing animation, wasn't it? You try and do it in PowerPoint. That's as good as I could do it. The four horns that replace the one that was broken off, says Gabriel, represent four kingdoms that are going to emerge from his nation, but will not have the same power. Okay, so you're telling me, angel, that what's going to happen is that something bad is going to happen to the first king as it gets snapped off the big horn, and then four other kingdoms are going to appear. That's what the angel is saying. So I now go back and I start looking at, this is Grolier Encyclopedia. So I go and look in encyclopedias to see, well, what did happen to Alexander the Great? I know he was the first king of Greece. And I read, Alexander the Great came to the throne of Greece in October 336 BC at the age of 20. He would soon destroy the Persian Empire. Yeah, the goat came along and trampled on him. I saw that. And cover all the territories of the ancient world as far as India. In 324 BC, Alexander returned to Babylon. He was now literally king of the world and began to lay down his strategies for consolidating his empire. He began to build cities and building works, new conquests, and even considered deifying himself. But like so many human gods, his own death caught up with him. In 323 BC, at the age of 33, he fell into a fever and died. No heir had been appointed to the throne of his empire, and his empire, the largest the world had known, was divided among his four generals. Interesting. The horn would get snapped off. Four horns are going to come up. So I then go and start hunting around to find out who are these four horns. The angel's taking me through some history. And I find that there were four, as it just said in the encyclopedia, there were four generals that took over from Alexander the Great. None of them related to him. One of them was a chap called Seleucus. One of them was called Lysimachus. One was called Cassander, and one was called Ptolemy. Ptolemy's down there in the purple, Cassander's in the yellow, Lysimachus is in green, and Seleucus is that orange blob. So now I know, well, the angel's right. It did happen. And this is hundreds of years before any of these events actually happened. So, well, what happens next? Well, what happens next is the angel starts talking to Daniel about some more detail about the horn that grew. Do you remember it? There was four horns that came up, and out of one of them, there was another horn that was started small and then grew and grew. Did you see that? And here we are, look. Out of one of them came another horn, which started small, but grew in power to the south and to the east and towards the beautiful land. So this must be, you know, it says a horn. A horn is to do with a ruler, isn't it? Because the original horn was Alexander the Great. This is, out of one of them comes another horn, which starts small. So it's out of one of the four. So you've got the four that have come up, and out of one of the four, there's another horn that's coming out of one of the four. So it must be out of, it's either Seleucus or Lysimachus or Cassander or Ptolemy. It's one of the four. There's another horn coming out of one of them, and it grows until it reached the host of heaven, and it threw some of the starry host down to the earth and trampled on them, and so on. We'll look at more of this in just a second. But just to show you what's happening here, what we're saying is out of one of the four horns, one of them grows and becomes super powerful. What we're going to find is that out of the four generals and the splitting up of the Greek Empire, one of the four got super powerful and took over lots more land. In fact, took over some of the territory. And if you look on the map there, that orange blob is Seleucus, right? He was one of the four. And can you see the orange lines going across? What he actually did was take over all of the other northern general areas. He became bigger and stronger, and as we're going to see, ended up coming down into Israel and went right across into the east as well. So we now know that one of them did actually become extremely powerful. But you notice, going back to this in Daniel's vision in verse 9 there, it says, out of one of them came another horn. And what we're being told is here that there's a specific ruler that we've got to go and find. Just like Alexander the Great was a ruler, but was snapped off in his prime, there's another horn that's going to come out of one of the four. And we're told quite a lot of detail. We're told that he grows in power to the south and to the east and towards the beautiful land. We're told in verse 11 that this horn, in other words, this individual ruler, sets himself up to be as great as the commander of the army of the Lord. We're told that this ruler is going to take away the daily sacrifice from the Lord. We're told that the sanctuary was thrown down. By the way, that doesn't mean the sanctuary is destroyed. There's some errors that's been thrown in around this, because when it says the sanctuary was thrown down, the original word means to be abandoned or cast aside, not destroyed. This isn't the destruction in AD 70, nothing to do with it. This is the abandoning of the sanctuary, because the sanctuary here, as we're going to see in a minute, is all to do with worship in Israel. There's a ruler coming out of one of the four horns, out of the Seleucid Empire, right? And what this chap is going to do is all of these things. He's going to puff himself up and think he's as good as God. He's going to stop people worshipping God and something to do with daily sacrifice. He's going to cause the sanctuary to be abandoned, and truth is going to be thrown to the ground. So I'm now looking for somebody like that that's coming out of one of the four horns that grew up. Well, we already know that it's the Seleucid Empire that became super powerful in the north. So I now go hunting around, and I find that there is a man that fits identically to what the angel said was going to happen, and his name is Antiochus Epiphanes. Now, this chap was a Seleucid. He ruled the Seleucid Empire because Mr. Seleucid, to start with, had other Seleucid rulers that ruled the empire, and they were all called Seleucids. They were all called Seleucid rulers. But when you get to this chap here called Antiochus Epiphanes, I think he's the one that the angel is specifically talking about. Now let's have a read about this chap. This is in Bible History Online. It says Antiochus IV, who lived from 175 to 164 BC, was the eighth ruler of the Seleucid Empire. He gave himself the surname Epiphanes, which means the visible god, that he and Jupiter were identical. The people called him Epimenes, meaning the madman. He was violently bitter against the Jews and was determined to exterminate them and their religion. He devastated Jerusalem in 168 BC, defiled the temple, offered a pig on its altar, erected an altar to Jupiter, prohibited temple worship, forbade circumcision on pain of death, sold thousands of Jewish families into slavery, destroyed all copies of scripture that could be found, and slaughtered everyone discovered in possession of such copies, and resorted to every conceivable torture to force Jews to renounce their religion. This is who the angel is talking about. Have a watch of this video.
Jewish people. Antiochus gained his position through bribery and flattery. He made notable conquests in the south, Egypt, the east, Persia, Parthia, Armenia, and the beautiful land, meaning Judah. His persecution of the Jewish people started after Antiochus was humiliated in Egypt by Rome. In 168 BC, Antiochus led an attack on Egypt and also sent a fleet to capture Cyprus. Before he reached Alexandria, his path was blocked by a single elderly Roman ambassador named Gallius Pompilius Linnaeus, who delivered a message from the Roman Senate directing Antiochus to withdraw his armies from Egypt and Cyprus, or consider himself in a state of war with the Roman Republic. Antiochus said he would discuss it with his council, whereupon the Roman envoy drew a line in the sand around Antiochus and said, "Before you leave this circle, give me a reply that I can take back to the Roman Senate." This implied Rome would declare war if the king stepped out of the cycle without committing to leave Egypt immediately. Weighing his options, Antiochus decided to withdraw. Only then the Pompilius agreed to shake hands with Antiochus. The furious Syrian king returned to Judah and poured out his anger at the Jewish people, who did not want to undergo Hellenization. In the book of Maccabees, we read that Antiochus plundered the temple in Jerusalem and committed deeds of murder. We read 80,000 men, women, boys, girls, and even infants were murdered by Antiochus' soldiers that attacked Jerusalem. In December 167 BC, Antiochus committed his crowning act of blasphemy against the Jewish religion by erecting an altar to Zeus in the temple and sacrificed a swine on it. Antiochus went so far as to claim that he is God and insisted that the Jews refrain from following the Jewish religious laws, like diet, circumcision, Shabbats, and feasts. He made war with Jewish people and their God. Eventually, the Jewish people did rebel and
So look, the angel is telling us specifically about this person. There's a whole bunch of verses about Antiochus Epiphanes in Daniel chapter 11. Verses and verses that, you know, the Greek Empire's come and gone. The Persian Empire's come and gone. The Greek Empire's come and gone. And now we've got all this stuff about one man out of the Seleucid Empire. Why is the angel telling us about this? And why is it all about the time of the end? Here's some more information. It's all the same stuff, just presented differently. So this is by Rabbi Paul Steinberg, who's written quite a lot about Antiochus Epiphanes. He's called him here, look, Antiochus the Madman, because that's what he was known. He was known as a madman. We're not going to call him Antiochus Epiphanes. We're going to call him Antiochus Epimenes, because he's mad. He's a crazy man. So here is what this rabbi writes about him. And I've just picked out a few bits. It's the same story that we've just heard. There you are. Look, many people referred to him instead of Antiochus Epiphanes, rather Antiochus Epiphanes, meaning the madman. Have a look at this. It says, immediately upon assuming power, he decided to pursue the conquest of Egypt, which no other Seleucid king had been able to accomplish. The Romans were advancing eastward and expanding their empire. So the Romans, it's a different story, but the Roman Empire is growing over there. And the Roman Empire is coming this way towards his territory, and he doesn't like it. So what he decides to do, according to the rabbi, which we just saw in the video, was to annex Egypt. What Antiochus Epiphanes wanted to do was to annex Egypt. But Rome was coming this way and stopped him from doing it. Rome warned Antiochus not to expand his kingdom in that direction, and Antiochus wasn't powerful enough to defy the mighty Roman army. Do you remember it? They drew a line around him and said, "You're not going to do it. We will force you not to do it." And so Antiochus Epiphanes was stopped in his tracks. However, it says there he would become even more aggressive towards the people that he ruled. So Antiochus didn't think, okay, I've had my chips, I can't, you know, the Roman army is too strong for me. What he then says is, I'm going to go even more crazy. I'm literally going to go crazy. What he then did was he left Egypt. It says there, Antiochus, furious with the rebellion, returned to Jerusalem and slaughtered thousands of people. He outlawed Judaism. He forbade the practices of worship, and a whole lot of worship that was still happening in Jerusalem was stopped. The temple was completely abandoned. That's that word cast down. It's not, it wasn't destroyed, it was abandoned. He forbade the worship of God. You see, Daniel chapter 8, brothers and sisters, is nothing whatsoever to do with AD 70. It's all about Antiochus Epiphanes. Nothing to do with AD 70. The chapter before Daniel chapter 7 and that vision is all to do with the papacy, and the little horn there in Daniel chapter 7 is a completely different little horn to Daniel chapter 8. This Daniel chapter 8 is all about this one man. Nothing to do with Rome. It's all to do with a horn that came out one of the four Greek generals. Seleucid man. Now, if you were going to put all of this together, the angel's telling us this for a reason. But he's telling Daniel because of events that are going to happen at the time of the end. Why is the angel not just telling Daniel just about the time of the end? Why is he saying, I'm going to tell you all this information about a Seleucid ruler that's going to come about 300 years from now, and I'm going to give you lots of information about him, but it's all to do with the time of the end. You see, here's something interesting then. If we put some facts up that we know about Antiochus Epiphanes so far, he ruled, did you hear him say that he was a Syrian king? Because the Seleucid Empire was based in the northern area, it was based in Syria. He tried to annex land, but he was prevented from doing so by Roman military might. He then turned his fury upon Judah and Israel. He killed many in the land. He prevented worship of God. And in fact, one bit that comes up later in the rabbi's writings, that he died of a divinely inflicted disease. I don't know what it was, he doesn't say, but that's what he's put in his notes. Now, you then come to this bit. You come to Gabriel's message. And Gabriel then suddenly says these words. Understand, Daniel, that this vision concerns the time of the end. I'm going to tell you, he says in verse 19, what will happen in the time of wrath, because the vision concerns the appointed time of the end. And in verse 26, he says, seal up the vision, for it concerns the distant future. So somehow or other, this ancient story that we've just been going through is something to do with the days in which we live. It's something to do with the time of the end. And what I'm going to suggest to you is that this same Antiochus Epiphanes that is mentioned in Daniel chapter 8 is going to reappear in the future right at the very time of the end. Somebody similar to Antiochus Epiphanes. Somebody that is actually going to play out exactly what happened with the original one, but at the very time of the end. God knew that there was this chap that was going to act like this in 180-something BC, and a very similar chap would exist at the end, and he's joining the dots between them. And there's over 2,000-year gap between these two people. And our job is to work out, who is this latter day Antiochus Epiphanes that lives at the time of the end? Is that interesting? Sort of interesting. But it doesn't stop there. Because Daniel chapter 8, with Gabriel, Gabriel now gives us more information about the chap that lives at the time of the end. So we've found out a lot about what the original Antiochus Epiphanes was like. But now the angel says, I'm going to tell you even more about the one who lives at the time of the end. So in verse 23 it says, this is the angel talking to Daniel, still explaining. He says, in the latter, or the word is often translated at the end, at the end part of their reign, so at the end part of the Seleucid reign, But right at the very end of time, when rebels have become completely wicked, a stern-faced king, a master of intrigue, will arise. He will become very strong, but not by his own power. He will cause astounding devastation. He will succeed in whatever he does. He will destroy the mighty men and the holy people. He will cause deceit to prosper, and he will consider himself superior. When they feel secure, he will destroy many and take his stand against the prince of princes. Who is that, by the way, do you think? Christ, prince of princes. This man is taking his stand against the prince of princes. Yet he will be destroyed, but not by human power. That's a whole bunch of extra information. It sounds like a similar character, though, doesn't it, to the ancient Antioch Epiphanes? Somebody that's puffed up, somebody that's wicked, somebody that's stern-faced, somebody that's become strong but not by his own power, whatever that means. He's going to cause lots of destruction and devastation. He's going to be successful in whatever he does. He's going to end up destroying holy people, God's people, we might say. He will cause deceit to prosper. He's going to think he's superior than everybody else. One day, he even stands against Jesus. But he's related symbolically to Antiochus Epiphanes. So now, we say to ourselves, well, okay, we know two things about this chap. We now know what he is like, because the angels just told us, and we also know what he actually does, because the angels said that these two people are linked together. So we know what he's like, because I've just read it out for you. He's stern-faced, completely wicked, he's a master of intrigue, he prospers through deceit, he causes devastation, he even attacks the holy people, he's a very proud, superior man. If we add in what the original Antiochus did, he must rule north of Israel, he tries to annex some land, is prevented from doing so by opposing military might. This winds him up to such an extent that he then turns his fury upon Israel, he kills many in the land, he ultimately stands against Jesus, but is finally killed by God's power. And do you know something? This man, when do you think he lives? At the time of the end. This isn't 100 years ago. This might not be 50 years ago. This man, whoever it is, exists at the time of the end. We know what he's like, we know where he's from, we know what he does. Now the amazing, have I got just a few more minutes? Where are we? 5 to 6. Give me just another 5, we'll wrap this up, and then we'll get super interesting in the next talk. But you see how you've got to lay the groundwork for the next bit. If you don't get the first bit, the history right, Churchill, the further back you look, the further forward you can see. We're looking back to help us look forward. Now, here's the other thing. Daniel chapter 8 is played out again to Daniel in Daniel chapter 11 in his fourth vision. Daniel chapter 8 that we've just been considering is Daniel's second vision. What was Daniel's third vision? What do we call that? Shall I tell you? The 70-week prophecy. That was his third vision. His fourth vision is in Daniel chapter 11. And the fourth vision that he had in Daniel chapter 11, there's no more beasts and stuff like that going on. There's no rams and goats and horns. It just talks to you about people. The king does this and another king does that. And then another king pops up and does the other. It's just an account of history. It's not beasts anymore. It's just telling you what's going on. And what you read about in Daniel chapter 11 is exactly the same story as the second vision, but just written in a slightly different way. And what we read about in Daniel chapter 11, we read about the king of the north versus the king of the south, and it's the exact same story, all written out. Now, because of time, I'm going to give you a summary of Daniel chapter 11, super quick. But if anybody wants it, I've written out the whole of Daniel chapter 11 and converted every single king into what history tells you is going on. But here is a very, very quick summary of Daniel chapter. Let's quickly flick over to Daniel chapter 11 before we have a break. So here is Daniel in Daniel chapter 11. He's now in the first year of Darius the Mede. And I stood to confirm and to strengthen him, it says in verse 11. This is Gabriel again showing Daniel an amazing vision. And we read in verse 2 that I will show you the truth. Behold, there shall stand up three kings in Persia, and then there'll be a fourth that's richer than they all. And by his strength, through his riches, he will stir up against the realm of Greece. And a mighty king shall stand up, somebody coming out of the empire of Greece. And he'll rule with great dominion and do according to his will. Who do you think the mighty king is that stood up in the kingdom of Greece? Alexander the Great. There he is in verse 3. And look in verse 4, when he stands up, his kingdom shall be broken. And well, look what happens in verse 4. When his kingdom is broken, it's divided towards the four winds of heaven. What do you think the four winds of heaven are referring to? The four generals. Not to his own posterity, nor to his dominion, which he ruled, for his kingdom should be plucked up and given to others. And that's exactly what happened. And on the chapters, on it goes. So what we've got in verse 1, it talks about the kings of Persia. Verse 3, just shown you, is talking about Alexander the Great from Greece. Then in verse 4, just shown you, it says that the kingdom splits four ways, to the four winds, it says. And then we've got this situation of the Seleucids being at the top, being the king of the north, and the Ptolemies down south being the king of the, well, I've just told you, the king of the south. It's pretty straightforward, isn't it? So you've got these two competing Seleucids versus the Ptolemies. And Daniel 11 is all about how they keep fighting each other, the north versus the south. And you can actually put names against all of the kings that are mentioned. No problem at all. We're just not going to do it until I get to here. So in verse 10 to verse 19 of Daniel chapter 11, you've reached somebody called Antiochus the Great. This is not Antiochus Epiphanes. It's the one before him, right? So you've got this chap called Antiochus the Great, and he used the 9 verses of Daniel chapter 11. He's known as the King of the North. And then from verse 21 all the way through to verse 35, it's all about the same fellow, Antiochus Epiphanes. All Daniel 11 is doing is just reading again Daniel chapter 8, not in vision format. Now it's just in kings doing X, Y, and Z. So verse 21 to verse 35 is all about the very same person that we focused in on. And then you get to verse 35. So have a look in your Bible at Daniel 11, verse 35. Have a quick look at it. What do you see in verse 35? Some of them, understanding shall fall, to try them and to purge and to make them wise. And then you've got the little phrase that we're interested in, even unto the time of the end, for it is yet for a time appointed. You see that? So we've suddenly gone from Antiochus Epiphanes in verse 34 up to verse 35, and verse 35 suddenly says, oh, by the way, I'm now going to talk to you about the time of the end. It's here again. So just as Daniel 8 got this enormous gap between Antiochus and a latter-day Antiochus, in Daniel chapter 11, the same thing's happening. All this chat about Antiochus, now I'm going to move to the time of the end. Why? Because Antiochus Epiphanes is the link to the chap who lives at the time of the end. And this isn't me making it up. If you want to go and read Elkhart's Israel, it's not easy, is it? For those of you who've tried to read it, it's sort of older English. But in amongst it, Brother John Thomas writes in relation to this verse, there is here a break in the prophecy. And he goes on to say it's leaping now to the time of the end. Why does he say that? Because that's exactly what's happening. We're leaping to the time of the end. You see, there is one last time that the king of the north versus king of the south are going to face each other. There's going to be this conflict between north and south once again, involving a man that's like Antiochus Epiphanes. And it all heralds the return of Jesus. Now, let me just show you this. So in verse 36 of Daniel chapter 11, we're now reading about the king that lives at the time of the end. Because it says the king will do according to his will. He's going to exalt himself and magnify himself above every god and speak marvelous things against the God of gods and will prosper until the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined should be done. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers or the desire of women or regard any god, for he will magnify himself above all. But in his estate he's going to honour the God of forces, and a God who his fathers knew not, he's going to honour with gold, silver, and with precious stones and pleasant things. He's going to work in the most strongholds with a strange God, with whom he will acknowledge and increase with glory, and he will cause him to rule over many and divide the land for a gain. And at the time of the end, the king of the south will push at him. And that king, from verse 36 to verse 39, is this same latter day Antiochus Epiphanes from Daniel chapter 8. Guaranteed. It's exactly the same king that we just read about. Daniel 8, verses 23 to 25. In the last time of the kingdom, when transgressors are come to the full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up, and his power shall be mighty and not by his own power. He will destroy wonderfully and prosper and practice and destroy the mighty and holy people. And through his policy shall he cause craft or deceit to prosper in his hand. And he will magnify himself in his heart and by peace destroy many. He will also stand up against the prince of princes, but be broken without hand. Now you might say that little passage there in Daniel 8, 23, doesn't sound exactly like Daniel 11, verse 36 to 40, but they are the same person. So I've done some research on this. So here are the verses in Daniel 8 that we've just read. And there are the verses in Daniel 11 that we've just read, and I've colour-coded where the key phrases are exactly the same. There is no other two passages in the Bible talking like this that line up than these two passages. So I couldn't find another passage in the entire Bible that links as closely with key words to Daniel 11, verses 36 to 39. The two things, the two people are the same people. And even at verse level, you can see how the words and the ideas are exact same Hebrew words. So what I'm saying to you is that Daniel chapter 8, the latter day Antiochus Epiphanes, where we're told these things here down the left, is exactly the same as the Daniel 11 king, verse 36 to 39. It's the latter day Antiochus Epiphanes. And we're given a whole bunch of information about him. And so what we're going to do after the break is we're going to work out who is this latter day Antiochus Epiphanes, this stern-faced, fierce king who's completely wicked, the master of intrigue, who prospers through deceit, who causes huge devastation, who's a puffed up, proud man. We now know from Daniel 11, he worships the military. He worships the God of forces. We now know from Daniel 11, he worships gold and wealth and expensive things. We will find out that he actually not only covers the territory of Syria, which is the ancient area of Antiochus Epiphanes, but we're going to find out that he actually also controls Russia, which might give the game away. He works in a stronghold. He attempts to annex land. This man will attempt to annex land, but is prevented by opposing military might and turns his fury upon Israel, kills many in the land, and eventually stands against Jesus. And that's what we'll have a look at after the break. When do we come back online, by the way?
About 10:30, I think.
Yeah, okay. So we're back on at about 6:30.
Yeah, so we've got some teams. And